American businesses need more skilled workers. How do we find the talent? How do we go about developing it? And how do we create opportunities for everyone in our society to get a good job? You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation, a nonprofit media company telling stories about the future of work, the future of education, and closing the job skills gap. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace. We talk with innovators, educators, decision makers, people with ideas and solutions for today's workforce challenges. From the factory floor to kitchens, more and more jobs today require some level of digital literacy. But not everyone comes into the workforce with those skills. And those who've been in the workforce for a while find that they need to keep learning new technologies to keep up. But who's going to teach them? One tech organization you may have heard of is putting some of its money to the task.
I think we need to be measured and look at the grand arc of history when we talk about skills gap, but that doesn't let us off the hook as employers and as funders about taking seriously what these changes mean for work, for people who are working, and making sure that we're doing our best to help people develop their skills to match those ongoing changes in the right way.
Andrew Dunkelman heads the Education and Economic Opportunity Team at Google.org. That's Google's venture philanthropy arm. He took a break from the recent U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation's Talent Forward Conference to talk with me. He explained how his organization is helping build digital job skills for marginalized populations and seeding technology for social good. Thank you again for joining me. And I want to know first, how do you see where we're at in terms of a talent gap? Is it natural evolution of an economy, of technology, or are we in a different kind of era right now?
You know, I think it's a modest problem. I think it's something we have to take seriously, and I don't want to downplay the so-called skills gap, but I also am inherently a little skeptical of claims that we're facing the greatest challenge of our generation. Look, technology has changed in jobs throughout the eras. And if you look back 20 years ago, we had perhaps the biggest change ever, which was the introduction of the personal computer to the workplace.
It was huge.
Yeah. In my lifetime alone, I've seen the nature of technology that we use in school and in work do a complete 180. And when I started elementary school, there were no computers. Everything was done by pencil and paper. Now every waking moment of our life involves either a mobile phone or a laptop computer. And so I think we need to be measured and look at the grand arc of history when we talk about skills gap, but that doesn't let us off the hook as employers and as funders about taking seriously what these changes mean for work, for people who are working, and making sure that we're doing our best to help people develop their skills to match those ongoing changes in the right way.
I guess that's a good way to look at it, because throughout the last century, mm-hmm. we've seen technology change and we've adapted to it. Great new jobs have come out of it, as you just said. We didn't use cell phones 20 mm-hmm. something years ago ubiquitously like we do now. So it's just a matter of recognizing the issue and dealing with it, maybe.
I think that's right. I mean, I would say there are a few things that we need to do to respond. One is we need good data and understanding, and we still lack that. What do newer technologies, I call them horizon technologies, mean for the workplace? So the obvious one is artificial intelligence or machine learning will have huge implications on the way we work. And none of us have a crystal ball, but I still don't think we have a really strong understanding about what that means for our relationship with work. So we need to understand things better. We need new solutions, and I think today's whole conference has been about discussing lots of innovation. I'm actually pretty optimistic that the ideas are out there. We generally know what works. You just got to figure out the right flows of money and matching between workers and employers. And then I think employers need to step up and do more, and that has happened. I am actually, in my view of the data and of large employers out there, is that in part because of the tight labor market that we're in, companies like ours, we talked to Walmart this morning, have really done quite a lot to invest in upskilling their employees and the world at large. I want to see more of that. I want to see more small businesses investing in these kinds of approaches as well. And I think together with that match of data, of new solutions, and of just sheer will from companies, I think it's a challenge we can solve.
What are some of the things you're doing within Google to upskill the current employees.
Yeah. Well, so we have an initiative called Grow with Google. We launched it in 2017. It's a partnership between our marketing team and my team, which is Google.org, our philanthropy, to make free resources available to people to help them get critical digital skills for the changing economy. What we've seen, there's data from the Brookings Institution that says that the number of jobs in America which require a low level of digital skills has declined by about half since 2002, being replaced with jobs with a medium and high level of digital intensity. So we recognize whatever job you do, whether you're in the kitchen or you're behind a computer screen, there is some level of digital literacy and competency that's required. So through Grow with Google, we've made a whole range of programs available, and I'll just mention two. One is our IT support certificate. This is hosted on Coursera, and it allows learners to become from novice to career ready in IT support in 8 to 10 months, all online. We've partnered with community colleges and nonprofits through Google.org to make sure that that program is in the hands of people who are most vulnerable and most likely to be left out of that digital economy. The other set of things that we've done is we've partnered with large nonprofit networks to help them really change the game in how they train people in digital jobs. So our biggest partnership, who we heard from this morning at the conference, is with Goodwill. We've put $10 million yes. behind them. Yeah. Working across Goodwills across the United States to build their talent, their capacity, their labor market insights, and their curriculum so that they can respond in locally relevant ways to the digital changes that are happening in their communities. There's lots more, but just in the interest of time, I'll give you those to summarize.
And we can link to the rest on our website.
Sure, yeah, sure. Yeah. That's a brief overview.
Yeah, and when you talk about the internal part of this, the working with your own employees, is that free to them?
Yes, it is. We have, so I'll give you an employee-facing example. As I mentioned, we know that machine learning and artificial intelligence are having profound changes in the way that we work. And in particular, for people at Google, which we now say is an AI-first company, everyone needs some command of artificial intelligence. So we've developed what we call our machine learning crash course. It's 40 hours of content delivered by Googlers for Googlers, freely available. And we've actually encouraged our engineers, every level of the company, whether you're a junior entry-level engineer all the way to our most senior staff engineers, to go through this program. 18,000 people have completed it so far, and now we've made it freely available to the world at large too. So I think that's a great example of how, as a point I made in my remarks earlier, reskilling does not have to be a scary thing. It doesn't have to mean I've reached the end of the line in this job and it's time to go get a new one. I think all of us are reskilling and upskilling throughout the course of our lives, and I think that's a great example of how it can be fairly unobtrusive but have really big payoff.
Do any of the programs that you're working with have a training for older workers? Because this is something that I'm still searching for that really good program that, and maybe it's not with you, but is there anybody out there that's looking at the 45 plus person who says, I got to work for another 30 years?
Yeah. It's not an issue that we've addressed head on. I know that Goodwill does, many Goodwills actually have programs that are designed for older workers.
Yeah, I talked
workers.
To Steve Preston
have
earlier.
Have you talked to Steve about that?
Good.
Good. So I think through our partnership with them, obviously, they do serve a number of older workers. I am also aware that the AARP has led some thinking on this question, and I know that they've got some work on future of work where they're at least looking at the data and trying to better understand. But I think you've hit on a really important point. As our careers get longer and as we age more, many of our working lives will continue into our 60s, 70s, and beyond. And so if we believe, A, that skills and jobs are changing, and B, we're working longer, it's an obvious necessity that older people will need to be reskilled in many of the same ways that all of us are. So I'm open to new solutions too, and if you find anything, let me know.
I'll call you.
Please.
I'll call you. Because I look at, we talk about these things, it's just made me think of a couple of things. One, I think talking about the skills gap or retraining, reskilling more accurately is bubbling up a little bit into the common discussion in the country. Mm-hmm. Not as fast as I would love it to be, though, and I don't know how to change that. I mean, Working Nation, we tell stories about it all the time, where, you know, we'd love everybody to look at us and go, like, you're like NBC News or ABC News. They don't. But we talk about it all the time because we think that is an important mission to make sure everybody knows it. And the reason is we all know somebody who is thinking, what's going to happen to me when my job changes again? So I feel like it's an important social issue that's not getting as much big play.
Right. And part of that may be because we have 3.5% unemployment. And so when everybody's working, it's hard to think about where you're going to be next. So I think in a sort of counterintuitive way, when the gap or the more we have more open jobs and more people looking for work is the time when the attention on that issue declines, because for the most part people can rematch into jobs relatively quickly. That perhaps that's one of the things that's going on here. But I agree with you. I think we don't hear nearly as much about it as a number of other issues with regard to work and opportunity.
Yeah, I think when headlines are out there and 3.5% unemployment is one of them, actually, mm-hmm. because that doesn't really tell everything. It doesn't talk about the underemployed. It doesn't talk about the people with two jobs. And again, it's one of my pet peeves, so anybody who's heard this podcast will hear it again, because I really, really think it's an important issue, because there are people out there in the community who struggle, and but they all use technology. Mm-hmm. So if that's the future, then they all need to know where to turn to find that help that they may need.
Right.
So who do you work with mostly? Do you work with businesses? Do you work with, I know you have a partnership with Goodwill, as
right.
you mentioned, but do you work with businesses? Do you work with colleges?
We work with all of the above. And one of the points I made in my remarks earlier was solving for the so-called future work. By the way, I don't really love that term, because I find that it's kind of taken on this connotation.
Yeah, I think it has too. And it's also hard to define it anyway, because
yeah,
it keeps changing.
It keeps changing. But in any event, solving for how the economy is going to change will require all of those actors you mentioned. Anybody who tells you that they can reduce it to one group is a charlatan, so it requires...
But also civic leaders. Do you have to get those
that's
in there?
Right.
Yeah.
It requires government, it requires educational institutions, including our four-year and two-year community colleges and so forth. It requires businesses stepping up, and it requires employees. So you need the whole marketplace. So all that said, we work with all of those. Now, me most directly as a funder, we fund nonprofit workforce development organizations. So whether it's Goodwill, or we work with a number of think tanks and research organizations who are trying to better answer questions. So, okay. For example, we just have released some work with the Joint Center for Political Economic the Joint Center, JCPE, I need to go back and look at that acronym, that is looking at issues of mobility for black folks in the rural South. One of their very interesting findings, I thought, was that of all of the studies that have been done on workforce development programs, only two have evidence of their impact on people of color. Because, first of all, many of the studies don't have evidence of impact at all. And then within that, only two were able to disaggregate their outcomes by race. So I think, again, I just come back to this point about we need better data, both about how things are changing and what works. We need new solutions, and that's why we partner with groups like Goodwill. And then we also need cutting-edge research and development. So we work with lots of technology-focused organizations, including, for instance, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who are looking at what are some of the technical solutions to, say, overcome frictions in the marketplace. The Chamber's work on the Jobs Data Exchange, which is helping to better
right.
match data about skills
you're
and competencies.
You're in the beginning of that with,
right.
with
we were
right.
one of the early funders of that
yeah.
work, too. So I think those, it's not quite a clean framework, but I think those three are some of the areas where we've really invested the most.
Everybody has to be forward thinking. Mm-hmm. What are you looking at? Is there anything in particular that you see as a trend that you are trying to capture now without giving away trade secrets?
Oh. Well, I mean, the one thing I would probably just point to is this large company investment in translating their skills and needs into the marketplace of education and workforce providers. So it's funny, I was giving this example earlier today that when I meet with community colleges, they will often say, employers don't want to work with us. And when I sit within Google, where we are making our IT IT support certificate available to over 100 community colleges and funding it, we'll say, man, community colleges really don't want to work with us. So there's some market breakdown there that's making it hard for translating employer needs into educational offerings. And that's for a whole variety of reasons that I'm not an expert in and won't get into. But I'm excited. I mean, one just to mention, because I've just gotten smart on it, is work of this group called PathStream, which is, it's a for-profit company. Yeah. You should look them up. And what they're doing is they're helping to translate corporate training offerings, whether it's your Salesforce certificate or maybe a Facebook digital marketing certificate, into college credit offering programs focused on community colleges and two-year degree granting institutions. I think that's really interesting because it seems like there's a technology solution there that we just haven't quite cracked.
Yeah, it sounds like they're so, like some companies, I mean, I used an example before, you know, Toyota needs advanced manufacturing technicians, so they work with community college. Really hard skills that they need to work on the line. So this sounds like it's similar to that, but not labor intensive. It's more IT intensive.
Well, I think their vision, and I don't know them intimately, but I think their vision is actually to work across a variety of industries, but really just do that work of translation so that not every company needs to sit down with not every community college system and manually build out that, say, credit articulation and translation from an employer set of needs, like perhaps the line at Toyota, into what does that actually mean for a degree granting institution?
What does that look like?
Right.
Yeah, identify it. If I Googled future of work, what would come up?
Oh, if you Google it now? Well, I think, unfortunately, you're going to see lots of really scary headlines, and that frustrates me a lot of times because I don't think it's in anyone's best interest to scare folks, and I'm not scared, and I look at this every day. I think there will be challenging transitions that folks have to make, but by no means do I foresee mass job displacement, for example. So I think you're going to see some of those robots take my job headlines. Hopefully you'll see some of the work that we and others are doing, the number of nonprofits and wonderful research institutions and workforce development providers who are all using this language as an organizing framework for thinking about how we prepare people, not just for jobs, but for quality work for the future. Because at the end of the day, the reason all of us are here is to create better economic independence and dignity for people. And so I hope we can get away from some of these scary headlines and a real meaningful conversation about how the future of work can offer opportunity and happiness for people.
Andrew, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Ramona Schindelheim, and my guest today was Andrew Dunkelman, who heads the Education and Economic Opportunity team at Google.org. Our guest next week is Bridget Burns, Executive Director of University Innovation Alliance. She'll talk about this groundbreaking national consortium of public research universities working together to improve outcomes for all students.
What we do is we help universities work together to share ideas, to scale up what works, hold each other accountable, be more ambitious than they naturally would, and to see the product of that work over time.
To hear more about the future of work and workers, subscribe to Work in Progress, wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Larry Buell, and executive producers, Joan Lynch and Melissa Panzer. Our theme music was composed by Lee Rossevier. See you next time.